The Illuminati, and by that I mean the shadowy people you never see that pull the strings of the Bushes and the Blairs and all the rest of it, they have known for a long time that this is coming. And what they've sought to do, and this is part of their panic now, is to do everything they can to suppress this awakening. It's no accident that it's now that they're trying to throw everything at us. They want the microchip, that's the jewel in the crown of what they want to do to bring about this suppression of the awakening. And they want a fascist global structure of imposition to stop it also. But in terms of young people, of course, they have to be prevented from becoming open, sharp-witted adults. So attack them from the start. And if you look at the additives to food, the additives to water, mobile phone frequencies and all the rest of it, they have a single common theme, and that is they are what's known as excitotoxins. They change the nature of the messages being passed around the brain. They rewire the brain chemically and electrically, and they're trying to attack children and young people on every level so that they don't turn into sharp-witted, knowledgeable, vibrant adults, which is the last thing they want. They want zombies.
Right. They're teaching
when you see the stuff that is being consumed by children in a day and what it's doing to their capacity to think straight, it's just staggering.
Yeah, well, it's chemically euthanizing their intellect is what it's doing.
Yeah, it's suppressing their ability to be the full magnitude and potential of what they could be.
On top of that, they're all being taught to be part of the hive, the group, not the individual anymore. And many of them are actually, because of peer pressure, afraid to achieve because they don't want to be put down by their buddies who are not achieving. So you've got this, again, terribly vicious negative self-enforcement ethic that that runs right through the whole culture of being young.
Yeah, and the young people today are probably under an assault greater than ever before.
They don't have a chance, David. I agree.
It's no accident that if you chart back to when these additives started being put in food and drink and everything, you pick up the graph rising in childhood behavior problems. I mean, the two go together, and they're meant to go together because of what we're talking about. They want to stop the population being intelligent enough, sharp enough, and vibrant enough to see through what's going on and make them compliant adults by making them compliant children, by bringing them up to be compliant from the start.
The law.
What is the most important thing in life?
What are you talking about?
What's the most important thing?
Respect.
Too dependent on other people.
What, love?
A little Disneyland, isn't it?
God's will.
It's close.
What is it then?
Necessity.
As in?
As in people do what is most necessary to them at any given moment.
All right. I'll be wearing fashionable Kevlar.
Country.
American media is a business, and it has a mission. Not to inform Americans, but to entertain them.
You know, there's happy news for happy people with happy problems.
And the business leaders said that they had to renew with vigor what they called the everlasting battle for the minds of men and indoctrinate citizens with a capitalist story.
Global corporations feeding us the news as they see fit.
Truth is subversive. It's anti-American.
Americans have computers in school, dozens of TV stations, and the most aggressive news media on Earth. Does that mean they're better informed? Hardly.
And now, for Newsreel, here's Sean Kennedy.
And it is a good day. This is Sean Kennedy reporting to you from the internet for Tuesday, December 13th, 2005. And this would be Newsreel, the WOG Global Sit Rep for Core Political Tyranny, Technology, and Trends for your headspace and timing. RAND Media is taking a stand for free speech today. And just by listening to this program, you are too. You can read all the news stories along with me by going to my live journal. And you can get to my live journal by currently going to Sean_Kennedy.livejournal.com. This would be a free radio broadcast that can be heard on RAN Radio, Wild Bunch Radio, WNY Media Network, KJAG Radio, OspreyRadio.info, Extreme Radio Tampa, as well as SRN1. And you yourself are free to distribute this broadcast any way that you see fit. So we got some feedback straight off the top on this bright and early Tuesday morning. Coming on to the 13th of December, which sounds like it could be kind of scary. You know, it's like Saturday the 13th or Friday the 13th or December the 13th. There's a lot of 13s in there. I think we should probably make that some kind of a Halloween-y kind of a thing. Maybe it would be a good idea to get Halloween to slowly start invading other months instead of just Christmas invading all the other months. You ever notice that? Christmas is like taking over most of November now. Remembrance Day is completely lost. You got, you know, it's basically dominating all of November. It even starts at Halloween. But, you know, I think we should Halloween should mount a counterattack. That's what I think they should do. I think Halloween should come forwards and say, no, absolutely not. We are going to dominate the Christmas thing. And, you know, Tim Burton tried with Nightmare Before Christmas and things like that, but I guess it didn't really come to pass. It's just something to think about, a little bit of food for thought, thought of the day. Maybe we could get Halloween taken over. Just an idea. Definitely one of the cooler kind of holidays, I think. Now then, instant feedback. Dear Sean, I've said it before and I'll say it again. I'm with the vegan. Sim is awesome. Atheist, vegan, libertarian, socialist is the way to go. Right on, man. Right on. From Prism. Now, I'm going to resist the urge to, you know, decry this because, you know, it's clearly a fan of how Sim thinks and feels. You know, so that's cool. That's someone voting for Sim. Very good. Into the news. In clean power news. Now, this is an interesting news story here. A Secretary of Energy, Samuel W. Bodman, today announced that the Department of Energy has signed an agreement with the Future Gen Industrial Alliance to build a Future Gen, a prototype of the fossil fuels power plant of the future. Sounds very George Jetson. The nearly $1 billion government industry project will produce electricity and hydrogen with zero emissions, including carbon dioxide, one of the greenhouse gases. The initiative is a response to President Bush's directive to develop a hydrogen economy by drawing upon the best scientific research to address the issue of global climate change. Today's announcement marks the official kickoff for the Future Gen project. Over the next year, site selection, design activities, environmental analysis will lay the groundwork for final project design, construction, and operation. This agreement places the alliance members among the world's most responsible and forward-thinking coal and energy companies. Well, look at that. Nice PR work there. Secretary Bodman said he praised them for the initiative. The prototype plant will be a stepping stone towards a future coal-fired power plants that not only produce hydrogen, coal-fired. So it's actually running on coal-fired power plants. Toward future coal-fired power plants that not only will produce hydrogen and electricity with zero emissions, but will operate with some of the most advanced, cutting-edge technologies. Well, it still runs on coal, though, it would seem. The Future Gen Industrial Alliance will contribute $250 million to the project. Current alliance members are American Electric Power, BHT Billiton out of Australia, Console Energy in Pittsburgh, Foundation Coal, imagine that, China Hunan Group from Beijing, China. Interesting that China would want to help us with this. Kennecott Energy, Peabody Energy, and Southern Company Atlanta. Interesting. Now, you know, with the stuff that's happening in China right now, I don't know how we feel about all the, you know, influence going on there. Maybe globalization isn't as good as we first thought on that front. But maybe I'm just, then again, too, I'm picking sides. You know, I'd sooner see America in charge of everything than China in charge of everything. That's just my own personal bias. The Industrial Alliance plans to issue a site selection solicitation as early as 2006, develop a short list of the most qualified candidate sites by mid-2006, and make a final selection in mid to late 2007. Future Gen will initiate operations around 2012. 2012, yet again, another 2012 date, and virtually every aspect of the prototype plan will be based on cutting-edge technology. The project will integrate testing of emergency energy supply and utilization technology, as well as advanced carbon capture sequestration systems. Ooh, sounds very spacey. Technologies planned for testing at the prototype could provide future electric power generations with zero emissions. That is only 10% higher in cost than today's electricity. Well, the thing is, the thing still runs on coal, though. I mean, there's got to be a better way to do this than just keep stuff running on coal. I mean, I thought the whole point of this thing was to get off of the fossil fuels. And, you know, stuff like this, I mean, there's a lot of money being sunk into it, but I wonder what we're actually building here. Like, what are we actually getting for our money here? A little bit weird, I don't know. Maybe it's good, maybe it's not. Something to look at, definitely something to follow. But there's lots of other power options that nobody's really taking seriously. There's lots of other stuff out there that nobody wants to pay any attention to because, again, Mr. Moneybags is in control. And he with the gold makes the rules. That's how it works. Be great if we could get away from that model, don't you think? Wouldn't it be great if we could actually, you know, break out of that, maybe look at some of this Teslian or Teslian? Is that a term? Tesliac? The Tesla-style system? Maybe if someone put some surreal, serious science behind that, I don't know. It's just a thought. Now, another thing, looking at that whole, you know, 40 and times Tesla kind of thing, is this giant ape news. Now, when you go to this site, click to it off my live journal there, and you go to this site and check this out, the similarities between the statue they've created and a Sasquatch is absolutely staggering. Now, I'm just going to get through this story. I read the whole thing. I didn't see any reference to a Sasquatch, but check this out. Walking through the forest, an early human hunter might have glimpsed an oversized ape through a thicket of bamboo. We may never know the outcome of such a prehistoric encounter, if even a meeting occurred. The mysterious ape, called a Gigantopithecus blackie, has long since vanished from the earth. Oh, yeah, doesn't exist, even though we see them all the time in the Pacific Northwest. Yeah, they don't exist. Not here. Never see them. It's long since vanished from the earth. And so has that early human species. Yeah, they're gone, too. But researchers have determined that the giant ape, which might have been the closest thing to a real King Kong, nice throw out there, considering King Kong's coming out. Yep, good, good. Nice piece of entertainment there. Did, in fact, live at the same time and roughly the same place as early humans. In China, 300,000 years ago, the two species might have well crossed paths, according to W. Jack Rink of McMaster University in Hamilton, Ontario, who doesn't want to stretch his neck out at all. A German paleontologist discovered Gigantopithecus in 1935 when he picked up a strange heavy tooth in the Chinese apothecary. It was labeled as a dragon tooth. Since then, researchers have found additional remains of the ape, which they've used to make guesses about its size, diet, and about where and how it lived. But experts are still left with many unanswered questions. We're sort of dealing with the mystery ape, says Rick Potts, a paleontologist with the Smithsonian Institute in Washington, D.C. We know so little about Gigantopithecus, largely because its remains consist only of three mandibles and hundreds of teeth. So we got no real bones for this thing. Gigantopithecus fossils, or 7 or 8 million years old, have been found in modern-day India and Pakistan. Remains less than 2 million years old, meanwhile, have turned up in China and Southeast Asia. Interesting. Given the limited fossil record, scientists debate how the ape evolved, when it died out, and precisely how big it was. There's this mythology that arose, largely because of the name, that it got to be huge. Some people say, oh, geez, it must have stood 7 feet 2 meters tall. But they don't really know. So they say. All I'm saying is, go take a look at this thing and see how it relates to the old Sasquatch there. Now, I have long held the theory that the Sasquatch has been, covered up. I think they exist. It's more than anybody who's ever flown a plane over BC would be say, oh, yeah. Yeah, it's real easy to bank that there could be, you know, a Sasquatch up in that region. Of course, you know, with all the clear-cutting that's going on in BC right now, the raping of our forests and all that kind of jazz, maybe would have seen one by now. But it'd be interesting to see if any loggers or any guys up there have seen anything in the bush. Maybe they have, out in the clear-cutting region. Be interesting to check out. Of course, then again, too, the guy who started the whole thing with the old Bigfoot, little piece of film footage, turns out it was a fake. So who's to say? Maybe there was no Bigfoot. I don't know, though. I would like to think there was, but you know, that's may or may not be the truth. The only way we're ever going to find out is if we shoot one of these things and drag it out in the middle of the street for everyone to take a look at it. That's the only way it's going to be proven. But why would we cover it up? Well, you know, the Mudhut crowd would really like to cover it up because, you know, all the religions will basically take a shit if we've got a half-man, half-ape thing. That's really bad. As well, the forestry industry would have a huge problem because, well, you've got this gigantic ape. you know, that is now clearly endangered and must be looked after and protected and all that good stuff. So there goes a lot of forestry. So there's a lot of reasons to keep something like that quiet. Just a thought. But, you know, when you go take a look at that picture on this website here about this Gigantopithecus thing, and then check out, you know, what some of the sketches are about the Sasquatch, I'm here to tell you, it's pretty similar. Lots of prehistoric creatures survive in the sea. It's not totally unbelievable that a couple have survived on land. In cancer news, scientists have discovered how cancer spreads from a primary site to other places in the body, in a finding that could open doors to new ways of treating and preventing the advanced diseases. Instead of cell breaking off from a tumor and traveling through the bloodstream to another organ where it forms a secondary tumor, or metastasis, research in the United States have shown the cancer sends out envoys to prepare the new site. Intercepting those envoys, blocking their action with drugs, might prevent the spread of cancer to treat patients in which it has already occurred, so they can try to stop the spread here. This is interesting because cancer, a lot of people believe, is a disease of the blood. There's a lot of people who believe there's cures for this thing, and of course, nobody's interested in a cure because there's no money in cures. We are basically looking at all the earlier steps that are involved in metastasis that we weren't previously aware of. It's complex, but we're opening the door to all these things that occur before the tumor cell implants itself, says Professor David Leiden of Cornell University in New York. It's a map to where the metastasis will occur, he added in the interview. You know, with all this, I'm having a hard time believing that they can't just actually cure this shit. Cancer's ability to colonize other organs is what makes the disease so deadly. Once cancer is spread beyond its original site, it's much more difficult to treat. In research reported in the Journal of Nature, Leiden and his colleagues describe what happens before the arrival of cancer cells at the new site. The authors show that tumor cells can mobilize normal bone marrow cells, causing them to migrate to particular regions and change the local environment so as to attract and support developing metastasis. Patricia Stieg of the National Cancer Institute in Bethesda, Maryland, said in a commentary. Now, this is kind of bizarre because there's a lot of people who claim that there are already cures for cancer. There are people who, have apparently gone and cured themselves of cancer. So it kind of makes me go, what is going on here? Why is this disease still around? Well, of course, we all need population control. It's good to make sure we keep the people dying. It's always good to make sure that, you know, we don't have too many people floating around on the planet. That way the rich people can keep the poor people dead and enslaved and all the rest of it. Interesting ideas. But, you know, I guess more and more treatment for the old cancer is coming down the pipe. In spin news, this is a great, great piece of spin here. You ready for this one? The study covering 70 countries released by Business Software Alliance. Now, you know, so you know, right there, first line, the Business Software Alliance, that cutting the global rate of piracy software, estimated at 35%. Okay, so according to the Software Alliance, they say if they stop, you know, software piracy, estimated by 35%, by 10 percentage points, would generate 2.4 million jobs and $400 billion in economic activity and $67 billion in tax revenues globally. Well, I love these numbers. You know, Jesus. All you have to do is make sure the Business Software Alliance does well, and the rest of the world will follow along greatly. Notable is the study's conclusion. Countries with high rates of piracy would capture the largest share of economic gains. China, for example, could create 2.6 million new jobs of information technology, and Russia could triple its IT sector jobs by achieving a 10-point piracy reduction. Oh my God, all you need to do is just cut down a little bit, and all your problems will melt away. When countries take steps to reduce software piracy, just about everyone stands to benefit, says Robert Holleyman, president and chief executive of the industry group, and Psycho, with no agenda whatsoever. Workers have new jobs. Like what? Consumers have more choices. Entrepreneurs are free to market their creativity. Great buzzwords here. And governments benefit from increased tax revenues. John Gantz, chief researcher at the International Data Corp, the research firm that conducted the study, they're totally not biased, said benefits of reducing piracy are shared globally, even if the money flows to countries like the United States, where the software is produced. The retailers service channels installing, deployment, and training. There's a bigger market than the package software itself, Gantz told a news conference in Washington where the report was released. Nonetheless, the report concluded the United States would get an economic benefit of $125 billion through 2009 if the global piracy rate came down by 10 percentage point. Oh my God! The study also concluded that while the global IT sector is currently projected to grow 33% through 2009, a 10-point reduction in software piracy could boost that by an additional 45% by 2009. The study also found that, if they cut down on the piracy, people will develop the ability to fly. And if everyone could fly, there'd be no need for software piracy as well. If they just cut it by 12 points, we all get the ability to melt ice with our eyes. Come on, guys. How fucking high do you got to be to believe this study here? Now, I have no doubt, don't get me wrong, I have no doubt that software piracy... You know, there's a lot of people out there who, it's something that we don't like to talk about. Software piracy is one of those kind of things where it's like, okay, well, what are we doing with it? Software piracy, to me, is when you're selling stolen software. Okay, that's software piracy. Okay? But if you got a guy out there who can't afford the software and wants to create and do things that he's going to give away as a form of art, I think that should be allowed. If a guy wants to make music... You know what I mean? And he doesn't have the ability to make music. He's not making any money with it. Then what the hell? Of course, then there's the flip side of that coin. Well, something given has no value. So it's interesting when you take this kind of viewpoint. I mean, should we have piracy? Should we just go completely draconian? I mean, Sean, you're apparently all about the law, aren't you? You like the law? So how do we draw up a law? Well, I mean, the law as it sits right now is piracy is bad. So if you're guilty of piracy, then you go to jail. Shut up and take your lumps. You know, well, I don't know. The law doesn't really seem to be so just, and I think it's going to do more harm than good. There's more involved with piracy than just dollars and cents. There's the aspects of education. This is why I think a lot of our laws need to be revisited. And the ones that we choose to go with need to be enforced. Absolutely. But this is one of those ones that I look at and I go, well, you know, this is choosing profits over people. In a very big way. And not only profits over people, we're choosing profits over children and our future. And that's something that I got a bit of a problem with. Now, in science news, two American Nobel Prize winners said Thursday they are worried about President Bush's attitude towards science and accused the administration of ignoring important research findings. Pretty heavy words from a couple of Nobel Prize, dinosaurs. There is a measure of denial of scientific evidence going on within our administration. And there are many scientists who are not happy about that. Ooh. Said Roy J. Glauber, who shared this year's physics prize with his fellow American John L. Hull and Germany's Theodor Hennisch. Their research on the quantum nature of light has resulted in more precise optical clocks and measuring system and is used in today's satellite positioning systems. So the guy's like, these are like heavy brains. Glauber also said some U.S. Congress members are more concerned about the political consequences of research projects than the scientific importance when they decide and where to allocate the money. The political consequences of research projects. This is, of course, referring to like stem cell research and things like that. The projects are not evaluated scientifically. They're only evaluated politically, Glauber said, but did not give details on specific projects. He spoke at a news conference after the three physics laureates gave a lecture to students and fellow researchers at Stockholm University. Hall agreed that the attitude towards science in the Bush administration does not go in the right direction. Well, he's not really coming right out of the closet here and saying, wow, Mudhut Christian crowd, kind of scary, but at least he's taking a stand here. I think to put a doom and gloom spin on it is probably a bit overreacting. But it is a worrying time. It is a worrying time. Yes, yes, indeed, it is a worrying time. I would have to agree with Mr. Hall. A large part of the U.S. scientific community has accused Mr. Bush of spending too little on research and appointing people who are not qualified for top government science positions. Well, yes, and administration officials have dismissed such concerns as misguided and accused some scientists of playing politics, attempting to undermine Bush administration policies by claiming they're based on bad science. Which, clearly, intelligent design is not based on bad science. Oh, wait! Yes, it is. Ahead of last year's presidential election, 48 Nobel laureates signed a letter endorsing the Democratic candidate John Kerry. So, you know, the smartest people on the planet seem to want to go with Kerry. All five of this year's American Nobel laureates met with Mr. Bush at the White House in November, but Glauber said the meeting did not focus much on science. He didn't seek or ask our advice on any issue, as far as I can remember, Glauber said. Well, you know. Interesting. I wonder if we are, in fact, approaching kind of a new dark time. I wonder what's going to be happening in the future regarding our scientific perspective. If the Mud Hut crowd gets in and takes over, well, you know, no one's going to be really interested in the truth. They're just going to be interested in facts to back up, you know, this craziness that we got going on with the biblical crowd. Again, don't get me wrong, you want to believe what you want in your own home, that's fine. But, if you're making decisions regarding science and the future of humanity, you know, it's time to admit that there's certain things we have to address, and we have to be looking at things without any rose-colored glasses, or rosary-colored glasses, as the case may be. In censorship news, last month, 62 members of the federal coalition signed a letter to the Prime Minister, this is in Australia now, calling for a ban on access to pornographic, violent, and other inappropriate material via the internet. Yes, we must only watch that on television. Getting it through the internet is a bad idea. The signatories believe that the internet should be regulated in a similar way to other media. If adults wish to opt in to access the material, then, of course, that would be their right. What would they have to apply for the right access? Yes, it's your right, but you have to get a license to have your right. And as we all know, you know, once you start with registration, it's the first step towards the realm of control and elimination. It's too easy for children to access all manner of material on the internet. I believe the system should default automatically in favor of protecting our children before we start considering the rights of adults. Protect the children before we start considering the rights of adults. Yeah. I don't know if that's such a good idea. You know, if you're not able to pay enough attention to your children and you're allowing them to do all this stuff online, then, clearly the fault lies with the parents. But, you know, we want to take responsibility away from the parents because nobody wants to say, you're bad fucking parents. General access to this material at public facilities is an area of particular concern. According to the Australian Liberty of Information Association survey of its 91 members in late 2003, the majority of the libraries in Australia did not apply filters. Good God, no filters in the libraries? What will we do? There is no legal obligation on public libraries to use filtering to prevent children from accessing pornography. My God! Of course, pornography is a classification, and yes, there is pornography out there. But generally, just as a thought, maybe we should talk straight to our kids. Maybe I'm way out on a limb here, just an idea. Options include filtering applied at the internet service provider level, i.e. Telstra, Optus, Primus, whatever. It could be applied on the basis that those customers who wish to access pornographic or other adult material could be applied to do so. Well, yeah. See these people here? These are the people who have requested pornography. Clearly, they're bad people. Australian Government Review last year found that there were a number of difficulties in mandating filtering at server level, with the cost of applying filters being from $45 million to ongoing costs of $33 million a year. Holy crap, all to stop boobies. Given the significance and magnitude of the reform, it could be seen as a small price to pay to protect our children from boobies. The boobies are out there, and they're coming after your kids. This reform would be supported by parents who would have the effect of filtering out pornography at home, on public sites, and the onus being on adult users to apply unrestricted access if they wish. This is absolutely nuts. Totally fucking insane. But I guess, you know, that's what Australia is doing right now. Now, the other day we were talking about how Tylenol is causing lots of problems when mixed with a few other chemicals, specifically chlorine. Well, it seems that we've got a little bit more going on with the acetaminophen, the leading or the main product of Tylenol and other products. Well, it's the main ingredient, anyway. The article goes on to say here, a popular over-the-counter painkiller is now the leading cause of acute liver failure in the United States. The leading cause of liver failure in the United States, and almost half of those cases are accidental overdoses. Paracetamol, or acetaminophen as known in the United States, is used by millions of Americans every year and is commonly thought to be safe. Until 1980, paracetamol, or acetaminophen, or aspirin, Tylenol, these kind of drugs, was not even listed as a cause of acute liver failure. Between 1998 and 2003, the proportion cases of liver failures caused by the drug nearly doubled. Well, finally, they're admitting that this drug causes liver failure. William Lee at the University of Texas Southwestern Medical Center in Dallas and his colleagues followed the patients with acute liver failure who were in a coma. Of the 275 people with paracetamol poisoning, 8% received a liver transplant, 65% survived without one, and 27% died. Initially, the researchers had suspected a direct relationship between how much of the drug is in the liver and for how long and the extent of the damage. But people who intentionally overdose, who tend to be identified and treated more quickly, had similar damage to those who overdosed accidentally. That suggested a clear threshold for what constitutes a safe dose of the drug. Interesting. Many people who had accidentally poisoned themselves did so by just taking 10 grams of the medication each day for about 3 days. The equivalent of about 20 pills per day instead of the recommended 8, an overdose that might be less serious with other drugs. Other people had unwittingly taken two products that both contained the drug. This is according to a hepatology report. Interesting how, you know, if you take 25 aspirin for 3 days in a row, you die. Versus, you know, if you were to have a lot of pain and you smoked a bunch of weed for 3 days, you wouldn't die. Matter of fact, you can't die from smoking weed. There is no lethal dose level. Just a thought. Just a little tidbit of information there. Lee thinks American drug enforcers should allow the lead of the UK, which requires products that contain acetaminophen to be packaged in blister packets and sold in small quantities. I think we should talk about limiting package sizes, says Lee. You can buy 500 at a time. They're like M&Ms. Jesus. Well, if you're eating, you know, Tylenol like they're M&Ms, you've got a problem. Clearly, there's a problem there. But that's why I don't like to take those pills, man. Stay away from them. Maybe if I'm in severe pain, I'll take that stuff. But generally, I like to stay away from it. Now, in free speech news, this is an interesting little story here. If you have internet access at work, there's a very good chance your employer has a system in place to monitor your online activities. Aha! So now you're being watched at work. Nothing new there. We all knew this. So if you're concerned about privacy, take heed. Under current U.S. law, there's little you can do to protect the confidentiality of your internet use on the job. Here's a rundown of the rights you don't have at work. Notice of monitoring, you don't have that. Only two states, Connecticut and Delaware, require that employers inform workers they are monitoring their online activity. So assume that you're compromised, according to Jerry Gruber, legal director of the National Work Rights Institute. Federal legislation requiring such disclosure has been proposed but not enacted. That said, most employers do provide notice to employees that they track their workplace web use. If an employer survey conducted this year by American Management Association of the ePolicy Institute, 89% of respondents said they notify employees if their web usage is being tracked. I personally, if I was a manager, would not. I wouldn't. I'd want to know if my employees were looking for another job. I'd want to know if my employees have dirty little secrets. That way I could use them to control my employees more efficiently. Because after all, if you're in management, employees aren't people. They're just a tool. Privacy outside the office doesn't exist. More workers are telecommuting these days, often using laptops and other portable devices provided by their employer. But leaving the office doesn't guarantee freedom from internet surveillance. Using the company laptop to remotely accessing the network is, from a monitoring legality standpoint, generally the same as working from the office, said Mark Schreiber, a partner at Edwards, Angel, Palmer, and Dodge, who advises firms regarding the internet use policies. People who are entering the company network from home, even from their personal computer, should be aware online activities may be monitored. You're being watched. To protect privacy, Gruber recommends investing in your own equipment. Use your own system that is in no way, shape, or form connected through the employer's network. So you got to even stay off their wires as well. Kind of disturbing that there's this much going on, eh? Isn't it just kind of sick and weird that this is happening? In space news, the United States has 413 satellites in space snooping for the government, checking on the weather and relaying the latest pop music, new database says. And relaying the latest pop music? Oh, right, that's your satellite relay, right. There's more than 382 in the rest of the world has spinning above the Earth. So the rest of the planet has 382 satellites combined. But the United States has 413 total. The inventory, developed by the Union of Concerned Scientists and released Wednesday, provides details on some of the Pentagon's most secret satellites, which may gather images in the dark or take high-resolution pictures from 12,000 miles away. Until now, the general public didn't have easy access to information about active satellites, says Dr. Laura Grego, a Cambridge astrophysicist who's on a team that spent several years compiling information on the nearly 800 active satellites. No one owns space, so everyone has a right to know what's up there. Interesting. I love that statement. Everyone has the right to know what's up there. Lots of rights there, eh? You've got the right to know. I have the right. The inalienable right to know. I have the right to know what's in space. No, you don't. That's bullshit. Why do you have the right to know what's in space? What the fuck makes you think you have the right to know what's in space? Well, it's nobody owns it, yeah? But if they put up a satellite, they don't have the right to know what's on that satellite. It's not your satellite. I mean, it'd be nice to know, don't get me wrong, but you don't have the right to know. Everyone throws that word rights around just a little bit too fucking easy, man. And it takes away from what we actually do have the right for. The material is gleaned from corporations, academics, governments, and satellite watchers who, as a hobby, spend their nights watching the skies for flickers of light. The group's inventory lists 21 different details on satellites with missions ranging from weather forecasting to transmitting music and news companies like Cyrus Satellite Radio. Perhaps most controversially, the repository includes what's known about top-secret spy satellites run by the U.S. and other governments. Oh, good job! Nice to list off all the top-secret stuff. With 413, the United States far exceeds other nations in numbers of satellites often used for communications. The Russians, who follow the U.S. in total number, I didn't know that, had 87. The Chinese have 34. The numbers are approximations that may vary depending on how joint ventures are counted, because, you know, some are like three countries involved, blah, blah, blah. Facts and figures on unclassified satellites were publicly available from the United States government until recently. For national security reasons, individuals must now request an account from the Air Force to access information and may redistribute any information only with permission from the Defense Department. So I wonder if this lady's like totally broken the law. The Union of Concerned Scientists opposes space-based weapons and destructive weapons that target satellites, even from the ground. Made the data public to start a dialogue about the best use of space. Well, you know, it's nice that you're opposing that, but I don't think you're going to be getting anywhere with the whole, you know, we don't want the weaponization of space. Yeah, that's kind of noted. No one's going to give a fuck on what you think about space. Thanks for asking. But it's nice that you think, you know, you have something to say about that. You know, I mean, whatever. Now getting back to 7-7 News. Now, as everyone remembers, there was that guy, that Brazilian guy, got himself shot on doing the whole, you know, running around thing, got himself shot in the subway tubes, shot in the head a whole bunch of times. Very, very, very fishy story. Very fishy. Well, following that up, officers involved in the fatal shooting of John Charles de Menezes, or Menezes, on the tube, could face charges. It has emerged, so the cops could get charged. The Independent Police Complaints Commission, the IPCC, said it was likely, not for sure, likely, to send its report to the Crown Prosecution Service to consider. So they might send it to Crown Prosecution, who might do something. A couple other mites there. The IPCC did not quiz Met Police Chief Sir Ian Blair in person from its report. The Tories branded this as inexplicable. So the Tories are like, why the fuck wasn't he talked to? Mr. Menezes from Brazil was shot dead in Stockwell in July after officers mistook him for a suicide bomb suspect. IPCC Chairman Nick Hardwick said its investigation had to decide whether its findings indicated that criminal offenses may have taken place. This was a lower threshold than for the CPS, which would have to decide whether to bring actual charges against any of the officers involved. He said, Mr. Hardwick said it was likely, but not definite, that the report would be sent to CBS to consider bringing charges. Interesting. It's for the CBS to decide, not us, whether there are criminal charges to be brought against anybody, and if so, what they are. The IPCC's Director of Legal Services, John Tate, said that the report was sent to CBS. It would include a list of the criminal offenses which may have been committed. You could charge these people with these crimes. They didn't say they were committed. It's just these ones could have been. So lots of outs here. The IPCC would not detail the nature of the alleged offenses which the CBS could potentially have to consider, although it is believed they could include offenses such as serious murder or manslaughter. A spokesman for the Menzies family campaign said it was dismayed that the IPCC had held a media briefing. We have supported the IPCC, and the family have always accepted that the IPCC investigation would remain confidential, the spokesman said. It is therefore very alarming that the IPCC have inexplicably released partial information in this manner to the media. Very interesting. Mr. Hardwick said that they had interviewed a number of the Metropolitan Police officers of all ranks over the fatal shooting of Mr. Menzies, but Police Commissioner Sir Ian Blair was not among them. Well, I don't really understand. Was Ian Blair there? No? Then what the fuck does he have to say? The Conservatives criticized the decision not to interview him as inexplicable. Well, let me give you an explanation. The guy wasn't there. The public expect no stone to be left unturned in this inquiry, said Shadow Home Secretary David Davis. Well, yeah, okay, that's nice you're inciting that, but, I mean, they're there to get the facts, and they can only talk to the people who are on the ground there to get the truth, so Ian Blair wasn't on the ground there, so what the fuck? The last thing anyone wants to encourage is conspiracy theories about a cover-up. Check out the leaps of logic being made there. Huge leaps of logic. I don't know. We're going to have to see what's going on here. My theory is I think the guy was involved. I don't know how he was involved, but I got a feeling he was involved because the whole thing just has a very weird kind of vibe to it. It's just, you know, the whole deal kind of makes my spider sense tingle. Now, speaking of making the spider sense tingle, how about this one here? In music news, this is brutal. This is a brutal one. You want to talk about how far it's gone? Well, here's a good indication. U.S. music publishers are calling for the imprisonment of owners of websites that contain song lyrics, guitar tabs, and musical scores. Throw them in jail. Music Publishers Association, MPA, says such unlicensed publication is illegal, and that closing websites and firing their owners is insufficient punishment. We have to fucking shoot them. MPA President Lauren Kay said, throw some in jail. Throw in some jail time, I think we'll be a little bit more effective. Holy fuck, dude. It's music. This is not a threat to society. Kay added that the photocopier had hit songwriters' and composers' incomes, but the internet was taking more of a bite. I see. Yeah, those goddamn photocopiers. Kay's remarks follow legal action early this week against developers of software that searches the web for lyrics. Walt Ritter was forced to withdraw one such application, Pearl Lyrics, after receiving a cease and desist notice from a recorder company, Warner and Chappell Music. The president of the National Music Publishers Association, another U.S. body, backed Kais's call. Well, imagine that! What the fuck are these corporations doing signing policy? That's what I want to know. Unauthorized use of lyrics and tablature deprives the songwriter of the ability to make a living, which is no different from stealing! Yeah, okay. It'd be different if they were like, you know, I don't know if I buy that, man. I mean, it's music. You know, I think we're getting away from the minute you start having this whole thing get capitalized with cash and everything, it's kind of sick and weird. I don't know how much I buy into this, but I guess that's what they're doing. You know, that's the road we're going down with the current law structure. I mean, they're not breaking the law, so, you know, that's what we're looking at. Now, here's a scary story coming out of England in child punishment news. Now, this is a prime example of what happens when you don't happen to have parents involved in the raising of your children. When you have everybody working, nobody's responsible for the children, the kids start getting into problems because, well, children are left unsupervised and raised by a media that is saturated with violence and with no one to guide their, you know, sort of instinct, they turn into really scary little creatures. So rather than try to realize that parents need to spend more time in the home and spend more time with their children, of course, we're going to throw the kids in jail. We're going to punish them. Tony Blair today launched a new war on yobbery. Yobbery is this, kids who, youth offenders, who are antisocial and stuff like that, with a crackdown on inadequate parents aimed at tackling even the tiniest tearaways too young to face prosecution. Parents of antisocial under 10s. Antisocial under 10s. Kids under 10 and he's antisocial. Now, that is a pretty powerful label to label to a kid right now. A kid under 10 isn't anything. It's barely even conscious. The reporter says, parents of antisocial under 10s who cannot be taken to court because they're, well, you know, 8. Or of older children who have not yet offended but are deemed at risk. So they haven't done fuck all, but they're at risk. Will face orders compelling them to attend behavioral classes or comply with standards and dramatic widening of the concept of antisocial behavior. Holy crap. So you get to go through political re-education by the state. The Prime Minister, who argues today in The Observer that traditional courts are too cumbersome to tackle low-level intimidation and violence, will unveil research showing where tough approaches are used even in their currently limited form. They have reduced both fear and antisocial behavior and incidents of criminal damage. Downing Street's plans to intensify the war on antisocial behavior, there it is, the war on antisocial behavior, could be also see Charles Clark, the Home Secretary, lose overall responsibility for the so-called respect agenda when Blair completes the unfinished cabinet reshuffle triggered by David Blunkett's resignation. Hazel Blears, now Home Office Minister for Antisocial Behavior, is tipped for promotion to the cabinet office, taking her current responsibilities with her. That would enable Blears and the respect czar, Lewis Casey, to work directly to Blair, cutting out the Home Office, where officials are more cautious about his radical ideas. So, you know, we're really going to crack down on these kids. That'll be good. The government's respect plan, due in January, is expected to define antisocial behavior as much more than just crime, stressing the need to tackle the root cause of the problem behavior before laws get broken. So we're talking about how you can act. This is some scary-ass legislation they're talking about here. It will also reflect warnings for senior police officers about primary school-aged teeny tearaways who are already involved in petty criminal behavior but cannot be punished because of their age. Children cannot be prosecuted until they are 10. So if you're 11, you can go to jail. Currently, court parenting orders, which require parents of troublesome children to attend parenting lessons, ensure children attend school and obey curfews on pain of fail or jail sentence against the parents. Only target the parents of older teens who have ASBOs or have broken the law. So currently, these antisocial behavioral kids, they put their parents in jail. Ministers will argue, however, that the risk signs of future trouble are evident in much younger children, and so their parents should be tackled early. Schools and other organizations will get new powers to seek the orders. Yeah, let's give it to the school teachers. That's a great idea. A lot of these power-tripping psychos, yeah, definitely, give them more power. We will see the agenda deepen to tackle and prevent problems as early as possible, broadening it across the country and across a wide range of behaviors such as government source. We are by no means complacent. People still experience too much antisocial behavior in many parts of the country. Well, I'm here to tell you, if they make that happen in Britain and they actually manage to get this thing to fly, make it work, you can bank that that is going to show up inside of the United States. Very scary laws. This is, you know, they'll start with the kids, they'll start with the underage and claimants for the protection of the children, and God only knows where that is going to wind up. That is totally terrifying to me. Today's daily hack is do-it-yourself ballistic gelatin, thanks to Mega Progman. Very, very cool. Shows you how to make ballistic gelatin for doing, well, I don't know, ballistic gelatin tests, which would be neat, you know, when you're planning for the alien invasion or in case Sasquatch attack your house. And that's all I got for you today. But do not worry, I will be back tomorrow to make sure you get all the information you need to stay alive. This has been a free broadcast brought to you by the generous donations of 62 total donators for the month of November. Two new donators, 10 one-time donators, and 50 continuing donators. Thank you very much, everyone out there who donates, because it does, you know, help out a ton. Thanks a whole lot. And if you would like to help keep this daily news broadcast on the air, please visit rantmedia.ca and click on the donate tab. Because, hey, every little bit helps. And even if you hate me, it's always good to have something that, you know, you can get mad at. Yeah, that makes sense. And thanks again to everyone and their assistance in gathering data. If you have access to sensitive information or any of their pertinent stories, please email them to Newsreel. That's N-E-W-S-R-E-A-L at rantradio.com. If you like the music in the background, be sure to pick up the album by Frontline Assembly called Millennium. And I'm going to leave you now with a track by Dean Gray called Novocaine Rhapsody. Very cool. Track 6, in fact. So until tomorrow, that is what Server said. End of line.